So this is an interview with Evan Williams, also known as Snow Williams, on Saturday, 11th of October 2014. The interview is for the Canterbury History Foundation, funded by the 2014 Canterbury Community History Award. The interviewer is Kim Newth. The interview is being recorded at 5 Corbett Crescent at the Anthony Wilding Retirement Village. The interviewer will also be taking shorthand notes during this interview. This is file number F002. So, Evan, we were talking before about the men in the Home Guard that you were serving with, and that many of them had fought in the First World War, and I asked the question, what did you learn from them? So perhaps we can get underway again with that question.
I learned there were no shortcuts, that things had to be done properly. Again, that was a new thing for me. I also learned from these guys that this wasn't a party, that we were mutually supporting each other, and we would fail if any of us didn't carry out our part of a task. Mm. As I say, it was a big learning curve, and I really respected those guys, even if they were bits of characters and larrikins, and they'd actually been there and done that.
Yes, yeah. And was there any particular person that, you know, looked after you or you remember?
For the first time in my life, I was a bit scared of an army bloke, a sergeant. He seemed to have all the power, more power even than the captain who was in charge of us. He was quite a strict sort of a guy.
Mm. And what was his name?
Jack Branthwaite.
Mm.
He really taught me a lot, and that carried on for many years. In fact, I sort of developed an inferiority complex whenever I was in the company of senior NCOs, particularly warrant officers.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have any sense of humour, and they were pretty severe guys. Mm-hmm. But when I got to know them, they were quite fun guys. They knew how to laugh and joke. And,
and
the way they took the mickey out of us poor individuals.
Yes. I'm not sure that New Zealanders have ever quite acquired the knack of being authority figures 24/7.
No. Well, the same applies to me, you know. If we were on duty, it was Sir. And if we weren't, then quite happy to be called Snow.
So Jack Branthwaite, you mentioned before, can you remember how to spell that surname?
Branthwaite.
I spelled that right, yeah. So initially these units, I understand, were formed really without the support of, you know, officialdom. So
we were part of, we had army uniforms.
Was that right from the start?
Yes.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Because some of the books talk about how it was a bit more informal to start with, but you had uniforms from the start.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay. And what uniform was it then? Was it a
standard? It was old territorial units from the First World War.
Old territorial uniforms.
Yeah.
Right.
And they were hot and,
scratchy.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. And so did you have weapons from the start as well?
No, but progressively we got weapons.
Mm. But there was a bit of improvised gear by the sounds of it.
Yes, yeah. That was all right.
Mm. And the things really seemed to step up a lot more into 1942, didn't they? Were there more men coming in all the time? Was it?
I really wasn't aware of that.
No, yeah.
In our platoon,
excuse me.
we already had numbers, and I think there were more of the rank and file in the battalion that needed more numbers.
Right, yes. And the weapons that you were issued with, what do you remember having?
No, we had 22 rifles, .22 rifles. I think it had been surrendered by the civilians.
Right, okay, yeah. And did you get, was that something, did they take you out to a range to practice and that sort of thing?
Yes, we fired off rounds.
Right, yeah.
Did very well.
Yeah. So being in Timaru by the Sea, was there work going on to strengthen, you know, coastal defences in South Canterbury?
I wasn't aware of that either.
No. And, you know, people often seem to have talked about, you know, these setting up of roadblocks and lookout points and things like that. So were you involved in...
No, I didn't have to do any of that. Our main concern was getting information from as far away... for people who wanted to contact us, and that involved being aware of the people in Geraldine on the hill who would forward us messages frequently at night time using semaphore.
Nighttime using semaphore, so how did that work?
The lights.
Oh, lights, I see what you mean, And so you'd have to interpret what... Was that always clear? Did you feel like...
Oh, we had a number of tests where a message would be sent through. We passed it on to the next people south of Timaru. And when it was all recorded and read back to us later, the messages were pretty... clear. They weren't distorted.
Right, yeah, okay. So at first, I guess, it would have been, as you say, at first it would have been quite tough actually getting up to speed with that stuff, but I guess you fairly quickly learnt, so yeah. So I guess a big question, how effective do you think the Home Guard would have been, you know, if there had been an invasion?
I think they would have done very well. There was a group near Geraldine, and I've forgotten the name of the guy who set it up, and they called themselves such and such guerrillas, and they had horses, they were armed. They would have been quite a problem for Japanese.
Mm.
They would have sniped at the Japanese. They would have been a real problem.
Mm.
So we may have managed to allay the problem by being prepared and the Japanese being aware of it and not willing to run the risk of trying to invade a country that they wouldn't be absolutely certain of beating. They were already... stretched in other parts of the Pacific. The Americans were in the war.
That's right, yeah.
So I think we might have been able to do enough.
And the civilian population would have been very pleased to have... would have been very pleased to have had the protection of the Home Guard too. I mean, it must have been...
must have been some satisfaction.
Yeah, or reassurance, yeah. I did wonder, you know, with your parents and family in Christchurch, did you ever worry, you know, like if something was to have happened, you know, whether they would have been safe? Was that something that preyed on you a wee bit?
If Christchurch were as well prepared as we were in Timaru, I was confident that they'd be safe.
I was going to say, the arrival of the American troops in 1942, my impression is that they didn't have a particular presence in the South Island, though, that they were more in North Island.
No.
So you don't... Do you remember them, their arrival?
I remember them arriving, and I actually came across them when I was in Trentham later on.
Yeah, yeah. But at that time, they didn't really have any impact on life South Canterbury.
No.
So as the... I suppose before leaving the Home Guard part of it, were there any particular exercises that you really remember, or particular incidents that, sort of proud moments, I suppose?
Well, yeah, we're a number 9 wire, a number 8 wire country.
Mm.
We were doing a night exercise up in the hills at Kingsdown, trying to get a message expected from Geraldine, and our semaphore lamp wasn't working.
Mm.
But one of the guys had a big torch. I don't know how many batteries they had, and it was 18 inches long, and they mounted that on the tripod. when the signal came through, they were able to very carefully adjust it so mm-hmm. that Geraldine could acknowledge it, read it and acknowledge it. So we made do with a torch.
That's amazing. That's a very powerful torch, though.
That was a big torch.
Yeah.
But it worked.
No, that's right. So I guess a lot of it was learning to use what you had, learning to use what you had, and And imagine you would have been pretty fit by the end of that too.
A lot of walking
around.
I was a tired lad by the time we got home at night from
So how late would it tend to go, nights?
10 o'clock at night.
Right, And how did they transport you around, or was it mostly just walking?
We had army trucks.
So as this perceived threat of the Japanese invasion, that started to fall away in 1943, and that's they started to kind of reduce everything in size, didn't they, with the Home Guard, and does that explain the transfer to the Harvest Pool then, I guess, by mid-1944?
I'd got to the age where they were calling out for Harvest Pool. They wanted labourers.
That's all right, can't help
it. Labourers to do farm work. And I wasn't averse to that, that's okay.
So you had to reach 18 or something for that? And the, so explain to me the role of the Harvest Pool again. And
we had to go and pick spuds on farms, and there was a job that none of us had ever done before. Big buckets and big bags to fill. The farmers were really grateful for that, and we were paid outside of army rules.
Because you were volunteers, in effect, but the farmers still paid you.
The same rate that they paid civilians.
So that was good,
Yeah.
So you were doing that. You would have had to have given up your job at council then, would you? Or
it was 3 months or something,
But
that was all right.
So it was full-time in the Harvest Pool. So did you get get given the clothing and overalls and things like that? And spades and
no, we didn't. No, they had mechanical diggers. Brought the potatoes to the top, and we'd have to just go down the rows and pick them up and put them in the bags.
So was this still in the Timaru area? Or
Waimate.
Waimate, yeah, I was going to say.
Kempton, Waimate.
So where were you living at that stage then? Because you wouldn't have been still at Beverley. Or were you still going back to Timaru at night?
Back to Timaru. No, we lived. We camped in...
Oh, camped, actually. So in tents, you mean? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Six-man tents.
Right, okay. So you have bunks or something like that that you sleep?
No, on the ground.
Or on the ground, okay.
Yeah. Don't be silly.
Yeah, okay, so that would have been quite not that comfortable.
And we did our own housework too.
All right, and cooking and...
No,
not...
And cooks.
Yeah. But not... what time of year? So I suppose it wouldn't have been...
It wasn't the middle of summer, I can tell you that.
So it got quite cold at night Yeah.
That was all right.
Yeah. So, compared to the Home Guard, it probably wouldn't have been quite as much fun, though, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, we had our fun.
Yeah.
The old farmer that was a bit nasty and didn't give us a cup of tea at lunchtime or whatever seemed to have a lot of breakdowns with his spud digger and bits went missing and ended up in potato sacks.
Oh, dear. And did you wouldn't have been able to do much, at night there wouldn't have been... Did you ever go drinking or anything? Or
We did go to the pub occasionally, but we were on a very small amount of money per day. We couldn't afford that sort of thing.
Was it just men or was that woman helping out there too?
All men.
Right, yeah. Yes, it certainly would have been quite physically...
It was different.
Yeah. So I was reading somewhere that, you know, this whole thing of the drive to grow vegetables was a real thing in 1943, wasn't it? The Dig for Victory campaign.
Yeah.
And So do you remember things like, public spaces being given over for vegetable gardens and that sort of thing?
No.
I think it might have happened more in the cities, perhaps, but,
Well, of course, Waimate is a... place where they grow potatoes.
And, yes.
That
didn't
that
need
was,
to do anything
that
else.
That was our focus.
Yeah. So I was wondering just about some of the broader, conditions of life, I suppose, at that time, like rationing during the war. How did that impact on you?
We weren't aware of it.
No.
My folks would have been, but we were pretty limited rations anyway. Nothing flash in the army. But it was...
But you were taken care of, I guess,
Funny thing we learned very, very early was that you mightn't like the food, you don't have to like it, all you can do is eat it.
Right.
And that was sometimes a bit difficult, but
yes.
We ate it.
Yes, So it was fairly basic. Mind you, I was reading in one of the books I've got there that this woman complaining about the fact that during the war they ate a lot of mince and chicken was a treat, and I thought, well, I'm not sure that times are much different now, really.
No, not a bit.
And new clothing and things like that, I mean, that was obviously a real luxury at that time.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have...
Didn't buy clothes,
yeah. So you pretty much just got around with the basics.
We only showered once a week too.
Dear.
Well,
what happened at the harvest pool when you were in Waimate in camping? How did you...
You cleaned up as much as you could.
Yeah. Did they have showers somewhere or...
Yeah.
And just travelling generally... you wouldn't have had a car or anything, obviously.
No,
so
things were pretty primitive, really.
Yeah. So you would have had the army transport to get around on, but otherwise,
we walked.
Yeah. So I've got here, what did you do for fun through these years? So did you have a girlfriend or spend much time with dancers or anything
didn't
like
have
that?
Time.
No.
Well, I went to dances occasionally, but I had a lot of other interests.
You mentioned fishing.
Oh, yeah.
You still managed to keep doing a bit of fishing?
No, that was to escape school.
Right, yeah. So other interests, what were they?
I don't think I had it, the army.
Yeah, army was the interest. So how closely were you following the progress of the war, you know, like... there would have been radio.
It really wasn't until about 1944, 45. mm-hmm. With the prospect of entering Burnham, that we sort of started to take an interest in what was happening overseas.
How real did the events that were taking place in Europe and elsewhere in the Pacifics, you know, seem to you? I mean, the threat of invasion, obviously, you were aware of, but...
You're looking at it through the eyes of a person in 2014. We didn't have immediate communication.
No internet.
We didn't know. didn't know what was going on. We're always... we're always 24 hours later.
And
longer.
Yes, but I guess there would have been this impact happening around you, wouldn't there, of people talking about having lost sons or whatever,
I was very aware of that, and
I
knew families that had lost guys, but you know, age, we thought we were 6 foot tall, 20 foot tall, and bulletproof.
That's right. You had no, and I guess you had your own life to lead, didn't you? You weren't necessarily thinking about what was happening to other people.
All we had to do was get through each day.
That's right, So did you, were you able to get time off during this time to, you know, head up to Christchurch to visit your family, or?
Well, that's strange. I did take the opportunity.
No, it's all right, can't help it.
We were only allowed to travel 50 miles. And Christchurch was more than 50 miles away, so I had to get on a train, travel to Ashburton with a bike. Better have a break soon.
We'll stop after this in a minute.
Then get off the train, get another ticket, and get back on the train, get off at, just head across Islington. And then bike to my folks' place, which was over in St Albans.
Oh gosh, it's a long it's a long trip, isn't it? Not as simple as hopping in a car and getting over there.
And then I had to do the reverse on the way back.
So you would have only done that a couple of times, probably.
Oh, no, a number of times.
So you would have been pleased to see you each time. And this experience of being in the Home Guard and the Harvest Pool, how do you think that you know, change you as a young man? It was obviously very life-changing, wasn't it?
Well, it certainly prepared me for the army. I was an old soldier by the time I got to Burnham.
And that's because you'd had... Might have to take a break anyway. Okay, we'll just leave it there for the moment.